Well, it's sure great to be with you guys this morning, and we've got a lot to do today because my goals today are in class to offer you a way that you can demonstrate to someone the reasonableness of belief that God exists, and then by the end of our worship time together, why God has revealed himself in Jesus of Nazareth and how we know that. So that's a lot of work. I mean, those are some pretty lofty goals we're going to try to achieve here today. And I hope that you understand how important it is for us to be able to make a case for our faith. Later on this week, I'm going to show you these statistics in more depth. But just week before last, a survey was released that showed that a higher percentage of Americans than ever in our history don't believe in God. And one of the most stunning facts in the survey was among people 18 to 29 years old, around 35% never pray. Now, you understand what that means, never pray. You ever heard the expression, there are no atheists in foxholes? Just about everybody, you would think, prays, even if they don't normally call themselves a Christian or consider themselves a believer. In a moment of crisis, just about everybody prays. Not anymore. That's not the world we live in. And so we need to be prepared to be able to make a defense of our faith. I realize that the things we're going to be talking about are not everybody's cup of tea, because for many of you, belief in God is so obvious, and belief in Jesus is so personal, it would never even occur to you why anyone would be opposed to those things. And when things seem so simple and so straightforward and so commonsensical, sometimes it's hard for us to think our way through step by step why those things are true and how to explain them to others. But more and more, I think we understand we live in a society in which we need to be able to do that. And so I hope to offer you some things this morning. Now, I understand it was just spring break. Is that right? For some of the kids. And I understand that, you know, springtime warms up, first chance to get outside. Maybe it was a beautiful day yesterday and you were out. But I just got to tell you, today of all days is a day when you got to be really clear thinking. So I hope you had several cups of coffee like I did this morning and you got the brain juices flowing, because we need to think hard together about some really important things. There should be a handout. Did everybody get the handout this morning? If not, we can make some more available. And I hope to make some available for the other two lessons today, and had some computer troubles, but I'll try to make sure you get copies of all of these lessons as well. All right, so let's get started here this morning. First of all, one of the things that you will often hear people say is that I don't live by faith. I live by evidence and I live by reason. But the reality is everybody lives by faith in some very basic and fundamental areas. Now, let me just show you a couple of these areas. First of all, everybody lives by faith when it comes to what we call the laws of science or the laws of nature. And what I mean by that is this. You can't see the law of gravity, for example. You can see the effects of it. You know, we could throw a pin in the air and it would hit the floor. You can see the effects of it. And from those effects, you can deduce there must be some principle that says what goes up must go down. But you don't see that. You just see the effects of it. Everybody lives by faith when it comes to these laws of science. In the second place, everybody lives by faith when it comes to logical propositions. You know, if you say all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal, you don't see that. That's a logical proposition, but it still makes sense. It's reasonable, even though you don't see it. And then, of course, the third thing that we all have faith in are past historical events. Like I met Brother Huff just a second ago. And do you know who your mother is or was? How do you know who your mother is or was? You've met her, but how do you know she was your mother? Now, I don't want to cause psychological trauma here, but, you know, you weren't conscious when you were born, and so you're taking it by faith. Somebody says, well, I could do a DNA test. Well, how do you know that DNA test hasn't been rigged? You see, there's a level of faith we all operate at in certain basic things, if we think that there's a reason to justify that faith, if we think the testimony is valid. So this morning, what we're going to do to make our case for the existence of God is combine these first two things here. We're going to look at basic common sense observations of how the world works, from nature and creation. And then from that, we are going to deduce, logically, some facts about God. Now, I have to tell you that this morning, our argument for the existence of God is so simple, it may seem complicated. Because sometimes when you explain the simplest things, because they're so simple, to explain them almost makes them more complicated. But I hope that you'll see, actually, this is a very simple argument that we're going to make for the existence of God. It is the very kind of argument that the Apostle Paul points to in his comments in Romans chapter 1. When he says, what can be known about God is plain to them, to the Gentiles, because God has shown it to them. And in verse 20, he explains, here is how God has shown it to them. And what does he say in verse 20? How has he shown it? How have his eternal power, invisible attributes, and divine nature been clearly seen or perceived? In what? Yeah, in the things that he has made. That's how his divine attributes, his eternal power and nature have been clearly perceived, not just hinted at, and obscured, but he says clearly perceived. It's so clear, in fact, he says, that the Gentile world is without what? Yeah, they are without excuse. So here is the question I have that I want us to think about this morning. What kinds of arguments were well known, even in the day of the Apostle Paul, that he could say, you know, even pagans see this? Now, they deny it, but they're not ignorant, they're just deliberately denying what they know to be true. What kind of arguments would they make? So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to make an argument that goes way back in history. And it is an argument from cause and effect. We see effects, therefore there must be a cause. And it's a particular kind of cause and effect argument. What we're going to talk about this morning is the argument for God as the first cause. First. Now, when we think of the word first, most often, at least for me, what I think of with first is first in a sequence of events, first in time. Like, for example, this is how we use the expression the first grade. By the first grade, we mean grade one, and then in a sequence comes grade two and grade three. So here's a picture of a very cute little boy in first grade. So first in time, first grade, the happiest 3 years of my life right there. So, all right, now that was the opening joke this morning just to see where we're at. And some of you are looking, saying, oh, I could see that it took you 3 years to get first grade. So, all right, we'll see how it goes the rest of the week. So that's one way of thinking of first in time. That is not the kind of argument we're going to make today. And if you get this point, you're going to be home free today, all right? We're going to use the word first in our argument for a first cause in a different way. Not first in time, but first in rank. Like, for example, when we talk about the first lady. When we talk about the first lady, do we mean that she is the first lady who ever lived? That's not what we mean, is it? What do we mean when we talk about the first lady as the first lady? Yeah, she's married to the president, so she's the highest ranking, so to speak. So in this sense, we're using the word first, not in terms of first in time before everything else, but first in time, but first in rank above everything else. That's the kind of argument that we're going to be making. Now, it is true that the Bible teaches that God is the first cause in the sense of first before everything else in time. In the beginning, God created. So, yeah, he is the first cause in time. But what we're really going to focus on this morning is the idea of God as first in rank, the first cause in rank. Now, what in the world does that mean? Well, if I had wanted to pack all this stuff, I would have brought it myself, but instead I'm just going to show you slides here, okay? But I want you to imagine that up here on this table I had this series of dominoes set up. And then I take my finger and I flick over the first domino. All right, that's the idea of first in time, first in a sequence. And then once I flick the first domino, what will happen? The next domino hits it, and then the next domino, and the next domino. Question. Once I flick the first domino, Do I do anything else? No. I could sit down, and they would, if depending on how long the string was, they'd just keep falling over, wouldn't they? I could go take a nap. I could vanish from the earth. But those dominoes will keep knocking over, because all that the first cause in this sense was the first in time, the first in sequence. That's not the argument we're going to make today. That's, by the way, what a lot of people believed in the 1800s, that basically God just started everything, then he doesn't do anything else. No miracles, no supernatural, no resurrection, for example. That's not the argument we're going to make. We certainly believe, Genesis 1:1 teaches, God started everything. But our argument for God as the first cause is much richer than that. So consider another illustration here, okay? Here is a painter, and he's got a long handle, and then there's an attachment, and then there's a roller, and a roller pad, and then paint. Now, what is the difference in the work of this painter as opposed to the work of the finger flicker for the dominoes? So think about it. Once the finger flicker flicks the first domino, does he do anything else? No. And the dominoes keep moving. On the other hand, with regard to this painter and the handle, attachment, roller, roller pad, and paint, if the painter stops, is any paint going on the wall? No. So do you see that what we have here is not a sequential series like the dominoes? What we have here is a different kind of series altogether. It is a simultaneous series, meaning that the handle, attachment, roller, roller pad, and paint are all working simultaneously as long as what? As long as the painter keeps painting, right? What happens if the painter stops? No paint's going up, is it? If he vanishes, if he disappears, that entire simultaneous series stops. What I want you to see is this. The Bible not only teaches that God is the first cause in time, but he is the first cause in rank. He is the cause above all other causes. Just like the painter is the cause above all other causes. The handle has no inherent power to paint, does it? The attachment has no inherent power. The roller has no inherent power. The roller pad and the paint. All of those things simultaneously work together only because there is a first cause in the sense of the cause that ranks above all of them. Does that make sense to you? The painter is the first cause. He's the ultimate cause. All right? This is what the Bible teaches about God. Not simply that God started everything, but that God is the sustaining source moment by moment of everything that we see. Consider these passages. Acts 17:28 says, "In him we live and move and have our being." Or this passage in Colossians 1:17 says of Christ, "He is before all things, and in him all things," what? "Hold together." In other words, not only did Jesus exist before everything in time, but he is the sustaining power that holds everything together right now. Just like the painter with the handle, attachment, roller, pad, and paint. Or consider this passage in Hebrews 1 and verse 3. "He upholds," present tense, "the universe by the word of his power." So let me use this illustration here so that we're all really clear. The Bible does not simply teach that God is like some heavenly blacksmith who bangs out a horseshoe, puts it in the water to cool it off, and then pitches it off, and then that horseshoe can exist independently of the blacksmith. The Bible teaches creation is much more like the music made by a musician. I'm a fiddle player. Anybody in here a string player or a horn player? Oh, you are? All right, we'll talk later, all right? So you think about the musician and the music. As long as the musician is playing, there's music. What happens if the musician stops? The music stops, that's right. That's the first cause we're talking about. Not just simply the God who sets things off and then just steps back and goes to sleep, like the God Elijah made fun of, that the prophets of Baal believed in. Is your God sleeping now? The God we're talking about is the God who moment by moment sustains everything that we see. So then, what we want to ask ourselves is, what would be some examples of a series like the painter with the handle, attachment, roller, pad, and paint? A simultaneous series of things that all must work together, but do not have inherent power to make anything happen, and must ultimately be caused by God. And the reality is, there are these things all around us. This is the reason the Apostle Paul could say that it is evident in the things that are made that there is a God who has eternal power. So what I'm going to do this morning is give you an example that's very complicated. I mean, this is so deep. The level of science that you would have to know is so amazing. Here it is. Are you ready? Grass grows. All right? That's going to be our starting point for our argument this morning. Consider this passage in Psalm 104, verse 15. It says this about God: you cause the grass to grow for the livestock and plants for man to cultivate. In fact, you could just use your concordance and look up the word cause and find numerous passages that talk about God causing things. He causes the sun to shine on the just and the unjust. He causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. Or in this case, Psalm 104 and verse 14. God causes the grass to grow. We're going to use this simple observation. Remember, our argument this morning is to start with basic common sense observations from creation, apply a little bit of logic. This is where you got to think just a little bit and reason our way to God as the first cause. Everybody with me so far this morning? We're done with page one, all right? So you can flip over to page two, all right, of your handout here. So what I've done is I've laid this argument out in just, we're going to take baby steps, all right? Simple baby steps to work our way through this argument, all right? Step number one, point number one, some things are caused. Everybody buy that? Some things are caused. Notice the argument is not everything is caused. Because if we said that, what would an atheist say? Yeah, or the atheist might say this: if everything is caused, then what caused? Yeah, what caused God? That's not our argument. That's not the argument. Our argument is a simple, modest observation. Some things are caused. Like, for example, the grass grows. That doesn't just happen. Something causes the grass to grow. Everybody buy that? Do you think even an atheist would agree with that? Some things are caused, like grass grows, for example. Yeah, if somebody denies that, there's probably not much else you can do with them, all right? So that's step number one. Step number two, the things that are caused cannot cause themselves. Does the grass seed cause itself to grow? Of course not. No, if it's caused, that means something else has caused it. So that's step number three. The things that are caused must be caused by something else. What would be some of the something else's you can think of that would cause grass seed to grow into grass? What else would be involved in that? Water, dirt, sun. I agree. And this is not deep science. You don't have no physics. Common sense. Everybody knows this. You got to have soil to nourish the seed. You've got to have rain to water the seed. You got to have sun to energize it. So yeah, the seed doesn't cause itself to grow. It's caused to grow, and it's caused by other things. The things that you all just mentioned: the soil, the rain, and the sun, for example. Point four. Next step. These various causes need something to make them happen. Something to cause them. In other words, what causes the soil to provide nourishment to seed? What causes the rain to fall? What causes the sun to give out energy? See? So now we have to ask ourselves the question, these are causes that also need causes. The sun needs a cause. The rain needs a cause. The soil needs a cause. And I'm not talking about way back in the beginning. I just mean right now. What makes the soil work right now? What makes the rain to work right now? What makes the sun work right now? Just like the painter. Think of the soil, sun, and rain, and seed as those different parts of the handle, attachment, roller, roller pad, and paint. See, it's a series, but it's a simultaneous one. They all have to be working. So our question is, these are all causes that need causes. What makes them happen? Point number five. If there were an infinite number of these causes that need causes, the series would have no first or last member. Now, this is a little bit of jargon here. So let's just put it like this. If a series is infinite, does it have a beginning or end? No. By definition, if a series is infinite, it has no beginning or end, right? Does that make sense to everybody? That's all this means. So what we're saying is, if the series of causes was infinite, in other words, you've got to have the soil to make the seed sprout and the rain and the sun, but something's got to cause the soil, rain, and sun. Somebody says, well, let's say that's, I'm a real science nerd, and I think it's atoms. Okay, what's causing those atoms to generate sunshine, soil, and rain? Well, it's quarks, okay? See what I mean? If it's an infinite series of causes that need causes, then by definition, if it's infinite, there's no first or last. It's infinite, okay? Step number six, baby step. If the series of causes that also need causes had no first member, if it's infinite, has no beginning or end, no first or last, then by definition, there's no first cause. Would everybody buy that? If it's infinite, that means there's no first or last. So there's no first cause. Key point. Are you ready? You're almost home free. We are almost home free this morning. Key point number seven here. If there is no first cause, there would be no source from which the series of causes that also need causes can derive its power to make things happen. Key word here is derive. So think about our painting illustration again. Does the paint have the inherent power to put itself on the wall? No, it comes off of a roller pad. Does the roller pad have inherent power to put the paint on the wall? No, it's on a roller. Does the roller have inherent power to move the rolling pad to put the paint on the wall? Nope. I know this is belaboring the point, but I want to make it so clear everybody can see unmistakably. Does the attachment have the inherent power to make the roller pad work to put the paint up? No. Does the handle have the inherent power to move the roller with the roller pad to put the paint on the wall? What in that illustration, what has the inherent power to make all of that work? The man, the painter. That's exactly right. In that illustration, that's what we're talking about here. So here's the point then. If there is no first cause, there would be no source from which the series of causes that also need causes can derive its power to make things happen. In the illustration of the grass growing, the seed has no inherent power to make grass. It has the potential to do it, but it has no inherent power to make it happen. It requires what? The things you listed, right? What were they again? Water, soil, and sun. But the water, soil, and sun have no inherent power of their own to make things happen. They require things like, we might say, the atomic structure, blah, 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 if you want to go that deep in science. My point to you is this. You just work your way up the chain of causes, and in the natural world, none of them have the inherent power to make things happen. They're all deriving power from something else. Make sense to you? Here's an illustration. How many of you were in the service? All right, so we've got some vets in here. Okay, excellent. So I want you to imagine, we'll put you in the Army, all right? And you're on your Army base, and you want to take a weekend leave, and you're just a buck private, right? And you want to finally get your weekend leave. So you have to ask permission, right? You don't have inherent power to go on leave, do you? You can't just say, you know, guys, I think I'm going to check out this weekend. You've got to get the power to make that happen from someone else. Now, for the sake of this argument, we're going to say that in the chain of command, no one has the inherent power to give you the right to go on leave. They have to get authority from the person who ranks above them. So you're a private, so you go to your corporal. Hey, can I go on leave? Can he say yes? in this illustration. Who's he going to go talk to? Sergeant. Sergeant, Corporal says, can Private Scott go on leave? He says, well, I don't know. I got to go talk to my lieutenant. He goes talk to the lieutenant. None of these guys have inherent authority to make this happen. Remember, that's the illustration. The lieutenant says, well, I got to go talk to the captain. Captain says, I got to go talk to the major. Major says, I got to go talk to her. All right, now, here's my question. And if you answer this question right, then that tells me you've got it. And we are truly home free. Are you ready for this? Here's your question. If that chain of command is infinite, if there's an infinite level of officers in the chain of command, are you ever going to get permission to go on leave? No. Exactly right. Because there's no one who has final say inherent in their own authority to say, yes, Colonel, you can tell the major he can go on leave. The major to tell the captain and so forth. It's exactly right. So here is the thing, and this puzzled me when I first read this. Some of the people in Paul's day, some of the pagan philosophers like Aristotle, believed that the world had always existed. They didn't have the Jewish scriptures. So they believed the world had always existed. But they nevertheless believed God was the first cause. And I puzzled over that because I only thought of the first cause in terms of first in time, in a sequence. But what Aristotle and other people like him said is, look, it doesn't make any difference if the world has been here forever or not. What is making things happen right now? What causes the grass to grow? So think about it like this. If you were in the army forever, an infinite amount of time, in our illustration of the chain of command, is that going to make any difference? If you've got to get the authority from somebody above you and no one has inherent authority to make it happen, doesn't make any difference how long you're in the army. It just means you're never going on leave for infinity. All right? Now, of course, Paul, with the benefit of the Jewish scriptures, knew that the world had a beginning. But the point is, everybody in the ancient world could get this point. Whether we think the world has always been here or not, right now, moment for moment, we see a series of causes that need causes. And if there is no ultimate first cause that ranks above all causes, that gives all the rest of them their power to make things happen right now, nothing would ever happen. No grass would grow. Or in the illustration of the guy on the army base, he's never going to get his leave. Because what we need is not simply a cause that's first in time, but first in rank, that has inherent power to make things happen that everything else in the series derives its power from. Does that make sense to everybody? Just like the painter. It wouldn't make any difference if that handle was infinitely long. If there's no painter to move it, is it going to paint any paint? No. So that's not what the issue is. The issue here is the power to make things happen. And that's what this argument is from the first cause. So if there's no first cause, there would be no source from which the series of causes that also need causes can derive its power to make things happen. Next point. But if the series of causes that also need causes had no power to make things happen, we would see no effects. In other words, if you're on that army base and there's no one with final say, inherent authority to give you permission to leave, you're never leaving the base. That's this point. Point nine. And yet we do see the effects of this series all around us. Like, for example, what was point one? The grass grows. We see things that are changing, that are being caused. All around us, rain falls, heat gives off from the sun, grass grows. Those are all examples of this kind of chain of causes that need causes. All right, so let's say you've got a buddy who is in the army and you're not. And you drop by the base and you say, hey, why don't you put in for leave so we can go take a weekend, have some fun together. Same rules apply, namely, everyone else has to get the authority from the rank above them. So you see him go ask his corporal, and then you see the corporal go ask the sergeant, and then he disappears because they're all going through this process again of getting permission from the one who ranks above them. Here's another question, and this one, I'll really know that you've got it clinched. All right? Let's suppose that a couple of hours later you walk back into the barracks and you see him packing up his duffel bag and he says to you, "We're out of here. Let's go and have some fun this weekend." What do you know about the chain of command on his army base? Is it infinite or is it finite? It's finite. Why do you know that? Because he got permission to leave, right? You see the effects of it. Do you see whoever that first cause or commanding officer is? Do you see him? No, but you see the effects of his granting permission because you know the only way he got permission to leave is if the guy above him got permission from the one above him, from the one above him. There had to be somebody somewhere who said, "Yes, you can take your leave." So do you see that even though we do not see God, the first cause, all around us we are seeing the effects of his authority because he's the one who ultimately makes things happen and all the series of causes that need causes all around us. You see that? Do you see how, like I said, when you spell down 10 baby steps, you know, I said, "Well, I got to remember this whole 10. Well, I don't remember. That's why I got it written down here, all right? So don't panic. You can make it simpler, but I wanted to spell it out in such small incremental baby steps. It's unmistakable. Anybody can see this. And remember, Paul says about the pagans, not simply that, well, God kind of hinted at this. He says it's so clear they are what? Without excuse. Right. You look at any process around us which involves things being caused or made to happen, and you are seeing this argument in play. Point number 10. Therefore, there must be a first cause. Now, if I haven't gotten this across to you yet, no worries, because this kind of argument was new to me about a year and a half ago. I was familiar with other arguments that focus on God as first in time. Not this kind of argument. This is a different argument, but it's so simple. But if I hadn't got it to you yet, if the paintbrush thing is not getting the job done, if the army base illustration job is not getting the job done, I got one more thing in the bag of tricks. We'll try that one and see if it clicks in for everybody, all right? So I want you to imagine that you come up to a train crossing. And what you see is this. You see a series of boxcars, and they are moving. Or in other words, they are being caused to move. Now, you know this. You know that a boxcar is designed for what? Carry stuff. That's exactly right. And you also know this. Does any boxcar, just a boxcar, have the inherent power to cause itself to move? It's just a boxcar, just a container, right? Now, as you look at this, it appears as if the boxcar that is behind one boxcar is being moved by the car in front of it. But you know that the car in front of the last one that you see doesn't have the inherent power to cause itself to move. Now, it looks like it's being moved by the boxcar in front of it. But you also know that that boxcar does not have the inherent power to move itself. It looks like it's being moved by the car in front of it. See the illustration here? All of these boxcars are being caused to move. And they are working together in a simultaneous series. This isn't just simply the dominoes. This is more like the paintbrush because they're all being simultaneously caused to move. But you also know that because they are just boxcars and none of them have the inherent power to move, that there must be what? There must be a power source. Most likely what? The engine. Even though you can't see the engine, you know there must be one. Why do you know there must be one? Because the boxcars are moving and none of them have the inherent power to do anything. They all can only move if something else moves them. There therefore must be something, probably the engine, which has the inherent power to move and doesn't need to be pulled by anything else. Does that make sense to you? That's the first cause in rank. The cause that ranks above all other causes because all those other causes have no inherent power to cause anything. They're just being caused by something else. There must ultimately be something that is the first cause. Let me ask you this question. If the train ran infinitely long, does that change this argument at all? No. It doesn't make any difference how long the train is. What if the boxcars were infinite in number? Are any of them still going to move themselves? No. So that's why, even in the pagan world, when they thought the world had always been here, that's not the issue. The issue is what's causing things to happen right now at this very moment. Of course, we know from Scripture the world does have a beginning. But the point is, there must be a first cause, not simply in time, but in rank. So in the case of the illustration of the painting, who is the first cause in rank? The painter. You know what? In fact, you might have an old paintbrush that belonged to your granddad. That paintbrush might be older than you in time, but is it higher than you in rank? No, because it's not putting any paint on the wall unless you move it. See that? And the boxcars may be older than the engine. That's not what we're talking about. It doesn't make any difference if the engine was just made yesterday and the boxcars were 200 years old. Are any of those boxcars moving themselves? Nope. You got to have an engine, something with inherent power to make things happen. You got it. You guys have got it. This is the argument for God as the first cause, the cause who ranks above all other causes and gives them their power. All right, so we're supposed to stop at what time here? Oh, this is fantastic, all right? So let me just pause here for just a second. I know we went through a lot of stuff here, so let me just pause. Anybody have any questions, any point you want me to explain or go over again? Yeah, no, that's not it. But and if you're thinking, well, how am I supposed to remember all this to share with somebody? You don't have to remember it. You remember the gist of it, and then you've got some notes now that you could show somebody. I certainly couldn't spout off by memory these points. I just wanted to lay them out in such a clear way that you can just follow this argument from start to finish. Anybody else have any questions at all? Yeah, go right ahead. That's right. So that's the reason that we ask the question, if no one has inherent power to be sort of, the in that illustration, the commanding officer, if that went on infinitely, would anything ever happen? That's why we ask that question. That's why it must be finite. There must be a limit or terminus point to it, or else nothing would ever happen. Yeah, that's it. So there must be a first cause that ranks above all others. In the army illustration, a commanding officer who doesn't have to go ask permission from anybody else, he just has the inherent authority. In the paint illustration, it's the painter. All right, so yeah. Does that answer your question? That's why, because if it was infinite, nothing would ever happen. Excellent. That's really the point you just raised. That's the key point in the entire argument. So that's why I've illustrated it in so many different ways. Yeah, great, great question. All right, now I want you to think again about this passage in Romans 1, because what Paul says is, you not only know there's a God, you know even more than that. What are the things Paul says we can know about this God? His what? Eternal power, invisible attributes, and divine nature. Now, eternal power kind of ties into the point we've been hammering away. Infinite power, eternal power is what you have to have. But it's also interesting that Paul says you can also know his invisible attributes. Now, let's be really clear here. Does Paul say that you can have saving knowledge of Jesus Christ by observing nature? No. We have to know more, and that's what the next two lessons today are going to be about. But he does say we can know some things. So I want us to reason our way through this here and think about what are some of the things that we could deduce. And I don't think I had room on your notes to put these, so if you've got a pen or a pencil and you want to jot these down, here are some things we can deduce. Number one, we know that whoever this first cause is, the first cause cannot be composed of parts. Why not? Well, think about it. Let's suppose back at Christmas time, you bought a toy for one of your kids or grandkids, but on the front of the box it has the dreaded words, "some assembly required." Now, some of you are thinking, well, no problem. For me, let me just tell you, that would always be an enormous problem because I can't put anything together, all right? So when you buy that box, say it's a toy robot, What comes are the parts. But in order for it to be a robot, what has to happen? Somebody's got to put it together. Right. If the first cause was composed of parts, that would mean somebody else had to do what? Put it together, which means it's not the what. First cause, exactly right. So the first cause cannot be composed of parts. The first cause is, I'll just put the word indivisible here. Here's the second thing to consider. Since the first cause is not composed of parts, by definition then, it cannot be anything material. Because material things are made up of what? Parts. That's right. Which, by the way, if you've ever wondered, why does God hate idolatry so much? Here's your answer. Because to conceive of God as something physical and composed of parts is about the most anti-godly thing you can do if you know who the true God is. Because by definition, he's not composed of material parts. So God hates idolatry because it confuses him with things in the created order. Here's a third thing. Since material things change, then we know that whoever this first cause is, he cannot change. He is immutable. Now, let me be clear what we mean by that. Here's all I mean by that. Is there anything I can do to make God more powerful? He's already maximally powerful, right? Is there anything you can do to make God more loving? He's already perfect love. Anything you can do to make God more gracious? No. See, you can't change him and improve him to make him better. That's the point. He's already the maximum level here as the first cause. Next, since things that are material exist in time, then we can deduce that whoever this first cause is, he doesn't exist in time. He is eternal. He can interact with those who are in time, but he himself is not bound by time, not like we material things are. And then here's the final thing we can deduce. Just simple observation here. There can only be one of these first causes. So let me illustrate it like this. I'm going to pick on somebody. Yeah, you over there. What's your name? Wesley, come up here a second, Wesley. It's okay. You don't have to look at them. I'm the first cause here, pal. All right, so you just come right on up here. All right, so here's Wesley standing side by side with me. Now, how can you tell us apart? Now, what are you laughing at? I mean, we're virtually indistinguishable here, right? I mean, the only thing I see is, now we're almost identical twins, aren't we, right? Because I realize, all right. So think about it. How would you tell us apart? I have a tie. Oh, it's my favorite over there. That's right. Yeah. I'm taller. All of these things, glasses, ties, taller, and the elephant in the room here this morning, all of those things are what kinds of characteristics? Physical or material. But remember, the first cause cannot be material. So here's the reason there can only be one. Hey, thank you very much, buddy. You're a good sport. Here's the reason there can only be one. If there was more than one, how could you tell them apart? You couldn't. The only way you could tell them apart is to say, well, one of them can do some things the other can't. But wait a minute. If there's some things he can't do, then by definition, he's not what? The first cause is exactly right. So that's how you can deduce there's only one God who is the first cause. So what do you call that which is unique, eternal, immutable, immaterial, and indivisible? That's God. That's exactly right. That's why Paul can say, when you look at the things that are made, you can see that there is a God, and you can even see his eternal attributes and his divine nature. And you're without excuse in this. Now, of course, the question for us is going to be then, has this God, who is the first cause, has he made himself known and revealed himself? That's the big question here, and that's what the next couple of lessons are going to explore. Yeah, go right ahead. That's exactly right. So that's where we're going. So if you were going to talk to somebody who is an atheist, then I think the first thing you can do is you can show them this argument that there must be a God, a first cause. And then we're going to shift from that to talk about why we believe that this God has revealed himself in Jesus of Nazareth, why we can know who this true God is. So just to kind of preview the coming attractions for the rest of the week in the table talk this morning, we're going to talk some about who Jesus is according to the Gospels. And then in the sermon, we're going to look at the evidence for who he is from the resurrection. And then in the lessons on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, what I want to do I think on Monday, kind of go on the offensive a little bit and talk about some of the glaring problems with atheism. And then Tuesday, talk about the reliability of the Gospels, why the record we're going to study this morning is something you can trust. And then Wednesday, I think this is the order, deal with the main objection to God, which is, if God is the first cause, why do we see evil things happen? Why is there evil in the world? And so that's what we'll finish. I think that's how I've got it structured to finish with that. But and again, I apologize. I wanted to have handouts for all the lessons. I'll try to have them ready to go for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then I can email them out to Forrest or the elders or whoever, the notes from today for the sermon and the table talk. So that way you'll have a printed copy of everything as well. But you guys were fantastic in class today. Thank you very much. Looks like maybe we got a minute or so. Any final questions on what we've talked about today? Yeah.
I've always felt like the number one evidence is because there's a creation, there has to be a creator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There had to be something that initiated us.
That's right. There had to be something initiated. The thing that I like about this particular argument is that if somebody wanted to say, well, why can't it be just some super space alien? Or, you know, what atheists like to talk about, have you all ever heard the phrase the flying spaghetti monster? That's what they say to make, they just made up something ridiculous. Well, what I like about this argument is the way that it's laid out, it directly leads to these attributes, which cannot be a super intelligent space alien and can't be the flying spaghetti monster because those are both material, composed of parts, and they change. All right. The reason I like this argument that talks about God as the sustaining cause is once you get the argument, it rules out any other option than the one true God. So that's why I like to use, you can use them both together to make that point. Yeah. That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. In this case, an uncaused cause would be the only power that could make it happen. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. That's exactly right.
There's also an argument against those that say there's only one God. And
what they mean by that is Jesus is created and God had to just simply
exactly.
Make, yeah.
It's
God's first cause. Yeah, very, very good. Hey, these are deep waters over here. That's good. Excellent. All right, y'all, thank you so much. And listen, if you've got any questions anytime this week, and maybe you're a little bit reluctant to ask them in front of everybody, you know, by all means, come and grab me, and I'll be glad to talk with you more about any of this stuff. But thanks a lot.